Hello, I'm Hadani Ditmars. Welcome to Out Front. Prince Rupert, British Columbia. A coastal town 1,500 kilometers north of Vancouver. Population 17,452. I've come to this town with a longing. To discover who I am, where I'm from, where I've come from. Where are you from? The litany of strangers, the question of many, the essential expression of fear, distrust, hostility. Always the four generations of tax-paying Canadians evaporate in the face of visual assumption, of dark, mysterious genes that belie my Vancouver-born identity. It's the Lebanese great-grandparents that do it. I mention the English part, the French part, but people always get stuck on the Lebanese part. Oh, that's where you're from, they say, satisfied that they've put me into an identifiable box. I've been taken for a spy in my ancestral village back in Lebanon, labeled rather unfortunately as an Algerian in Paris. Now I'm hoping for something, a sign, an experience, some sort of meaning from an isolated North Coast fishing town. This is the place where those great-grandparents came to almost 90 years ago. From danger. From beauty. From Lebanon. As I approach Prince Rupert's main harbor on the ferry from the island airport, I breathe in the deep, salty smell of the North Pacific. It's a different smell than the warmer, dirtier Mediterranean that welcomed me in Beirut, and it's stronger than the urbanized Kitts Beach smell of my childhood. Strangely, it smells familiar. At the bus station, I'm met by my cousin, the only grandson of my great-grandparents to remain in town. He arrives in a pickup truck. He speaks no Arabic, but looks incredibly like an Asel Lebnani, a real Lebanese. He has just been elected mayor. In 1910, when our ancestors came, it was in the hope that Prince Rupert would become the gateway to the north. They came, as many did, lured by the promise of the Grand Trunk Railway that Charles Hayes was to build. He'd hoped to make Prince Rupert the principal port of departure for the silk he would import from China. In the end, Charles Hayes died on the Titanic, and Prince Rupert remained in relative isolation. But my great-grandparents stayed. They'd fled Beirut at night, closely followed by a Turkish gunboat. In Prince Rupert, they had six girls and one boy. They ran a store. They never went back. They died thousands of miles from Beirut. Their girls all married true north, strong and free, English-speaking alcoholics. The boy married a Lebanese who complained eternally of being stuck in the cold damp of North Coast isolation. They were all unhappy in different ways. And now here I am in Prince Rupert, a place I've never been to. The place where my mother and grandmother were born, where my grandparents lived briefly after my grandfather took over my great-grandfather's store. A place where my mother's cousin is now the mayor. A place where I hope to find something, some kind of mystical explanation of where I belong. I'm trying to imagine what it was like for my ancestors to have settled here in 1910. What were their impressions of this place? Who did they connect with, this lone Arab family? My cousin tells me that his father was adopted by a Haida chief, William Matthews. This idea of adoption appeals to me as a kind of cross-cultural spiritual bonding. I want to know more. My cousin offers to introduce me to Chief Matthews' daughter, Margaret Aitkins. We drive to her niece's house to have a chat. Margaret explains to me what adoption means, love, respect, honor, And her niece explains that in the 40s, when the adoption took place, there was no official celebration or ceremony because these had been outlawed with the potlatch. The adoption would have taken place in the back of the store, she thinks. My impressions of Prince Rupert change daily. I find it confining, yet friendly and cozy. Superficially dull, yet full of interesting stories. I meet Leonora, a Calabrian ex-girlfriend of my cousin, the infamous bachelor mayor. She tells me a bit about what it was like for her mother's generation, coming from Italy as young brides, adjusting to a new place. There is a resonance. My cousins descend for a mini reunion. I start to obsess about my lack of connection to my relatives, who have all more or less assimilated. There is no more Arabic. There is only tabbouleh left as a cultural artifact. A visit to the archives proves revealing. My great-grandmother's brother, Solomon, is listed in a book of local notables circa 1916. Amongst a group of Smiths, Jones, etc., Solomon is described as married and a property owner. I see photos of my grandmother as a flapper, my great-uncle in Masonic regalia. The only hint of Lebanon comes through an old photo of the family grocery store. I notice that the bananas are hung from the ceiling in bunches, just like in the old country. Just as my cultural confusion identity crisis reaches a fever pitch, I leave my cousins in Prince Rupert and I drive to the Nass Valley, the ancestral homeland of the Nishka First Nation, and the subject of a treaty 100 years in negotiation. I talk to Rod Robinson, one of the chief Nishka negotiators, who is also an Anglican priest. Rod tells a great story of how, in the old days in Rupert, everyone had to become an Anglican in order to fit in and to do business. He says that once there was even a Jewish furrier named Goldblum who came to town and became an Anglican. After that, he tells me, his father, who was also an Anglican, brought all his furs to Goldblum. An image forms of my great-grandfather, who became an Anglican as well, Goldblum and a Nishka man, all sitting together on a wintry day in the church overlooking the harbor. The Nass Valley is so eerily peaceful with its beautiful lakes and mountains and lunar lava beds that I soon abandon my identity issues. In a land where a people have been recognized, I seem to find once again my own sense of self, quite naturally. In a place which is all about identity, ancestral and natural spirits, belonging to a clan, I feel liberated from the necessity of having one. I feel who I am. I breathe. I walk through the lava beds. I meet German tourists from Dusseldorf and hear tales of UFO sightings from a totem pole carver. I go back to Prince Rupert at peace. I no longer feel that longing that I came with. Back in Prince Rupert, I meet the only Lebanese in town, an old guy from Zachle named Joe Saba. He came here in the 60s and worked on the railway and in a grain elevator. He lives alone in a room with a map of Lebanon on the wall. Miraculously, he offers me real arak and homemade hummus and baba ganoush. While it pours rain outside, we speak Arabic and I dance to some old Kalthoum tapes. Joe is overjoyed and tells me to come back and stay for a month. The next day, I decide to throw a goodbye party. I want Joe to be the guest of honor. but despite my pleadings, he refuses to come. He's insulted, he says, by the fact that my cousin Jack once turned down his invitation for tabbouleh several years ago. Still, he agrees to lend me the Umm Kulthum tapes and gives me plates of homemade kibbeh and hummus. I invite William Matthews' grandson and his wife and son. Margaret can't make it because of a Haida friend who drowned in a fishing accident. They bring halibut and bannock. Leonora brings some homemade wine. My cousin the mayor orders Chinese food. Dempsey Bob, a local carver, comes with his wife. I play the Umm Kulthum tapes and dance in the living room, a place where I'm sure no Lebanese woman ever danced. I dance there in that room overlooking the harbor. I dance with Chief William Matthews' great-grandson and his mother. Others join in. We all dance together. I dance for my ancestors and for myself. I dance for the ghosts and for all the women in my family who never got to dance this way. I shake my shoulders and move my hips. I dance for this rainy harbor town where I've surrendered my longing and found another piece of myself. Prince Rupert, I'm Hadani Ditmars.
You've been listening to Out Front. I'm Glenn Bergen.
And I'm Myron Dick. On the next program, you'll hear about our trip back to our hometown to rediscover our Mennonite roots. This program is always looking for new freelance producers and new story ideas. If you want to know more, here's how to get in touch.
You can phone 416-205-6606. You can email. The address is outfront@toronto.cbc.ca. And the mailing address is Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. Good night.